You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Trei Asar podcast. We're going to pick up where we left off from the last podcast in the middle of Perek Gimel of the Book of Amos. And you might recall that we were discussing there the description of the destruction of the city of Shomron, Shomron being the capital city or one of the capital cities at a certain point of Mamlechet Yisrael, a very well-established, strong city. And Amos is describing its downfall. And we're going to pick up today with Pasuk Yud Bet, which continues with this same theme. Now, if you ever wondered what it is that the Navi Amos is doing when he is not prophesying to the people, you would think from the psukim that we're going to look at today that he was having a chavruta in the book of Shemot. In these few psukim, from Pasuk Yudbet through Pasuk Tetvav, we're going to see the continuation, as I said, of the description of the destruction of the city of Shomron. But what makes these psukim particularly interesting in terms of understanding this something about the style of the Navi is that in three different places within these few psukim, he uses allusions to a few different things in the book of Shemot, which enhance what he's trying to say, right? Gives greater depth or greater strength to this description of Shomron's destruction that he is telling us. So, Pasuk Yudbet, Ko Amar Hashem, Ka'asher Yatzil Haroe Mipi Ha'ari Shtei Chara'aim Uvidal Ozen, Ken Yinatzlu Bnei Yisrael Hayoshvim B'Shomron Bifa'at Mita Uvid Mesek Ares. Okay, so first just the basic meaning of the words. Just as a shepherd will save from the mouth of a lion a leg or a piece of an ear, Ken Yinatzlu, right, so too will Bnei Yisrael save, Bnei Yisrael who are sitting in Shomron, save little bits and pieces. They will save a bedpost or Vidmesek Ares, there's a lot of debate as to what exactly those words mean, but it seems also to be like something having to do with a bed, be it like some sort of blanket or something of that nature, right? When the people are running from the destruction of Shomron, of their city, they're going to be able to grab these little bits and pieces, a piece of a bed, a blanket, right? Nothing, basically, of the once illustrious city of Shomron. So two things that are interesting about this. Number one, it's interesting that Amos uses here an image taken from the life of a shepherd. And we know from the introduction of the book of Amos that Amos was a shepherd himself. Right, so it's always interesting. This is not the only example of this, of course, in books of Nevi'im, but it's always interesting when a Navi takes something from his life, something about which he has a very deep understanding, and uses it within his prophecy. And we see that here, that Amos, who was a shepherd, probably understood very well, or was certainly familiar with these laws having to do with the shepherd. What exactly is this law? So, if you look in the book of Shemot, in Perek Kaf Bet, starting with Pasuk Tet, you have a list of different rules. What happens when you have somebody who is watching somebody else's property? What happens if something happens to that property? In the last example, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, it's talking about the case of someone who is watching somebody else's animals, right? Let's say, for example, a shepherd. V'im ganov, Pasuk Yud Bet, that was Pasuk Yud Aleph. Pasuk Yud Bet, im tarof yitaref, yivi'ehu ed. Right? If the, let's say, sheep was ripped apart, presumably by some larger animal, such as a lion, Yivyehu Eid, the shepherd has to bring some sort of proof, right? Eid here not meaning witness, but rather meaning some sort of proof that the animal was indeed ripped apart by some other animal, and, you know, in order to prove that he, the shepherd, did not, you know, just have a good dinner that night, but rather that there was some other source of the death of that animal that the shepherd was watching. Hatrefa lo yishalem, right? And if the shepherd is able to bring some sort of proof, then he does not have to pay for this animal that he was supposed to be watching. So back to our pasuk in the book of Amos. He says, just as a shepherd will try to save from the mouth of the lion a leg, right, or two legs, or a piece of an ear, it's not just, as one might have thought, that the shepherd is desperately trying to save anything of this animal, for whatever reason, but rather, this refers back to that law that we see in the book of Shemot, that the shepherd needs to save these pieces, because this is the proof that the shepherd was not the guilty party. So just as a shepherd would do that, so too Bnei Yisrael from Shomron will be desperately trying to save, right, and succeeding only in saving little little bits and pieces from their homes. So first of all, you learn something just by the metaphor that's being used here, right? Being ripped apart by a lion is pretty. Violent, right? It's a pretty final way of dying in the case of this sheep. And so I think, first of all, that lends something to the description that that Amos is trying to give over to us, right? That the destruction of the city is a very violent and very final destruction. And of course, we also learn something from the image of the shepherd, and also in the second half of the pasuk, the people desperately trying to save something, right? It gives over something of the desperation of the situation that the people of Shomron will be in. But there's also an irony here, right? We know, we saw from the law in the book of Shemot that the reason that the shepherd does this is in order to prove his innocence. Whereas Amos is implying, right, that the destruction is coming down upon the people of Shomron because they aren't innocent, right? That desperate though they may be to save little bits and pieces here and there, they are never going to be able to prove their innocence. Right? They are guilty, and that's why the city is being destroyed in the first place. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Shim'u v'ha'idu b'veit Yaakov ne'um Adonai Elohim Elohei Hatzvaot, right? So Amos is now going on to something else. Ki biyom pokdi fishe Yisrael alav ufakadeti al mizbechot Beit El venigdeu karnota mizbech venaflu laaretz. Right. So what does Amos say here? On the day that Hashem will poked, right, will remember pishe Yisrael alav. The sins of Yisrael, on the day that Hashem remembers this, right, the day he remembers the sins of Yisrael, the verb lifkod, to remember, is often used in the context of Hashem remembering a person, or in this case a group of people, for just reward, right? Be that either meaning getting what they deserve, either in the good sense or the bad sense, right? Hashem could remember you for good, and Hashem could remember you for bad. Here, it's the pshaim of Yisrael that are being remembered, the sins of Yisrael that are being remembered, and therefore this is for bad. And on that day, biyom pokdi ufakadti al mizbechot Beit El, I will remember the mizbechot, the altars of Beit El, right? Which again, what ufakadati here means, right? I will destroy the mizbechot of Beit El, and v'nigdeu karnot ha-mizbeach v'naflu la'aret, and the corners of the mizbeach will fall off, will fall to the ground, right? That, you know, if perhaps you've ever seen a picture of what the mizbeachot looked like, or if you read a description, right, the corners of the mizbeach were higher than the other parts of the mizbeach, right? So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the destruction of these mizbechot and the corners falling off. That's the corners that are being referred to, these like kind of corners that jutted upward from each corner of the mizbeach. The first allusion that we see, again, to the book of Shemot, from these psukim, have to do with the words, lifkod, right, to remember, which I explained before, right? Ki biyom pokdi pishe Yisrael alav ufakadati al mizbechot Beit El. One of the places where the verb lifkod appears in a very significant place, in a very significant way, in a negative sense, but Hashem remembering for bad, is again in the book of Shemot, Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, right? A little background to this pasuk, right? This is in the aftermath of Cheta Egel, right? The sin of the golden calf, and Hashem has just said to Moshe that things are going to change, right? He no longer, his presence, God's presence, is no longer going to go directly with the people as they travel. He is no longer going to be immediately in their midst. Rather, he's going to send his malach. And the reason for this, he explains, is that the people are a sinful people, right? They've proven that repeatedly, and at the point of Cheta Egel was the most significant of the transgressions of the people, and you know Hashem is ready to give up on them, right? Start over with a nation that will descend from Moshe, and he says the reason that he's going to send his malach and not go. And that his presence will not go immediately with the people, is that he's going to end up destroying them, right? They sin, and he's going to punish them, and that'll be the end of Yisrael, right? So a way of mitigating this, right, the punishment, is by not being directly there, rather having his malach, meaning, you know, he'll be a step removed from the people, and therefore they will not be the immediate recipient of any punishment that Hashem will send their way. And so in Pasuk Lamed Dalet, it says, V'ata lech, neche ta'am el asher dibarti lach, hinei malachi yelech lefanecha. Right, go explain to the people what I've told you, right, that my malach will go before you. Uviyom pokdi ufakadati aleihem chatatam. And on the day that I remember you, meaning, again, recall, lifkod often means to remember in terms of getting either reward or punishment, in this case, punishment. On the day that I remember you, ufakadati alayhem chatatam. Meaning, in this case, what is Hashem saying? It's not that you're never going to get punished for things again, but rather, punishment will not be immediate, right? It's not that every time you do something wrong, there will be immediate punishment from God. Rather, punishment will be pushed off. And then when something significant happens, then Hashem will remember the transgressions of the past, and you'll kind of get, you know, one very large punishment that will encompass everything that came before this last straw of transgression that will occur. Right? Later on, Moshe argues with this, but at this point, this is what Hashem is explaining to Moshe. This is what the plan is going to be. Fast forward back to Amos Perek Gimel. Ki v'yom biyom pokti pishe Yisrael alav ufakadati al mizbechot Beit El. Right, I will remember, right, I will remember the sins of Yisrael, and I will destroy the mizbechot of Beit El. Now Beit El, right, should already ring a bell, right? Beit El was one of the two places that Yeravam ben Nevat, the first king of Mamlechet Yisrael, designated as places of worship for Mamlechet Yisrael, so that the people of Mamlechet Yisrael would not go down to Yerushalayim. And in each of these places, near the Mizbeach, he put an Egel Zahav. Right? And the Psukim there clearly allude to Cheta Egel in Sefer Shemot, right? Including the Pasuk, which best, is the best concentrated expression of the sin of Bnei Israel when they say, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, right? These are your gods, Israel, who took you out of Mitzrayim, right? And this chet of Yeravam, of building these two mizbechot with these two golden calves, is if you'll pardon the expression, is like the original sin, or one of the original sins of the book of Malachim, right? It is referred to over and over and over again throughout the books of Nevi'im that come afterwards, as like, a terrible thing that Yeravam did. So here, it's not coincidental that Amos is saying that I will remember the Mizbechot of Beit El specifically, right? Beit El was the place, of one of these golden calves. So of course, right, if it's not clear already, the connection being, of course, that back then when Hashem said to Moshe, I will one day remember all of the sins, right, and then there will be this big punishment, right, for all the sins, all the punishments that I have pushed off, right? So Amos is basically hinting and saying, this is the moment, right? Adko, it's not going to go any further. Pushing off punishment is not going to happen anymore. Hashem is going to punish right now for all of the accumulated sins of Bnei Israel. And of course, the appropriateness of it all, of course, is because by destroying the Mizbechot of Beit El, he's alluding to the fact that all of these sins of Am Yisrael currently, meaning during Amos' time, all began with the building of these golden calves and these Mizbechot in Beit El and in Dan. Right, so that's allusion number two to the book of Shemot. And the third allusion is in the second half of Perek Yudalit, in the description of the destruction of the Mizbechot and the falling off of the corners of the Mizbech. In one last pasuk in Sefer Shemot, in Perek Kaf Aleph, Pasuk Yudalit, we are told, Makeh ish vamet motumat, right? If somebody kills another person, that person dies. Vasher lot sada ve Elohim inaliado visamti lecha makom asher yenu shama, right? If somebody kills accidentally, then they are given a place to run to, right? The idea of an ir miklat, that if someone kills not intentionally but accidentally, then they don't get the death penalty because they didn't kill intentionally, and therefore they have a place to run to, so that the Goel Hadam, the one who's going to avenge the death of the person that was murdered, or killed, actually, will not come after him. But then the Pasuk Yudalit, V'chi yazid ish al re'ehu lehargo be'orma, mi'im mizbachi tikachenu lamut. That if a person, the Torah continues, did plot intentionally to kill another person, and they run to a place where they can take refuge, you can take that person out in order that person should die, right, in order to punish that person. Mi'im mizbechi tikachen olamu, take him out from my mizbeach in order for him to die. The Mizbeach was sort of like a mini ir miklat, right? If somebody wanted to take refuge, they were afraid of being killed, they could go to the Mizbeach, and that would sort of protect them, right? We have different stories of examples of this in the Tanakh. For example, both Adoniyahu and Yoav are afraid that Shlomo, at the beginning of his reign, is going to take revenge against them because of various things that they did against Shlomo. And so they both run to the Mizbeach and hold on, quite significantly for our purposes, to the Karnota Mizbeach, and they are taken away from there. Right? So we see that it wasn't just the Mizbeach, but it was by holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach that they kind of were able to take refuge. And Mi'im Mizbechi Tekechen Olamut, take their hands off the corners of the Mizbeach, pull them away from the Mizbeach, and then you can give them the punishment that they deserve. So here, in our Pesukim, there's great significance to the fact that Amos is saying that the corners of the Mizbeach are falling off. Right. Once again, we have the people of Shomron, right, and throughout the books of throughout the books of Nevi'im, right? The people are really in denial, right? They don't believe that punishment is going to come upon them. This is helped along, as the Nevi'im say, by the Nevi'ei Sheker, who lead them to believe that they're not going to be punished. So here too, you see a sort of denial of sorts, right? They think that they can save themselves, and by saying that the corners of the Mizbeach are going to fall off, Amos is saying there is nothing that's going to save you, right? There's no place for you to take refuge. Similar, perhaps, to the first allusion to Sefer Shemot that we saw, where the people are desperately trying to find something, according to the metaphor, to prove their innocence, but as I pointed out, ironically, that isn't going to happen. So here too, we see that there is nothing that is going to save them. There's no way that they're going to be able to prove their innocence and escape punishment. The last pasuk. V'hiketi veit hachoref al beit hakayitz, v'avdu batei hashen v'safu batim rabim nu'um Hashem. Right, so this brings us to the last pasuk of Perek Gimel of Amos. No allusions to Sefer Shemot, as far as I know, in this pasuk. But it once again kind of emphasizes the significance of the destruction. That in the destruction, Hashem is going to destroy Beit HaChorif and Beit HaKayitz, right? The summer home and the winter home. This is probably referring to the palaces of the king, although it might also be referring to the people, the regular people, right? Again, Shomron was a rich and established city, so there were a lot of people with a lot of homes in the city. Amos, as we've seen in other places, particularly rails against the upper class, right, who oppress the poor. So this might also be a dig against them, right, that you who have so many homes, right, are going to lose everything. V'avdu batei hashen, right, the ivory homes are going to be destroyed. V'safu batim rabim, right, and many, many houses are going to be destroyed, says Hashem. And this leaves us at the end of Perek Gimel, and we will pick up with the continuation of the Book of Amos in our next podcast.